Hi, this is Damon Pastolka, host of The Faces of Business, where I talk with interesting people sharing life and business experiences to entertain, engage, build community, and provide information to help others succeed. If you're interested in learning more about one of our guests or how we are helping business owners generate wealth and build businesses they can sell or succeed at Exit Your Way, you can find more information on our website, exityourway.com. Or by contacting me directly, Damon@exityourway.com. I hope you enjoy the show.
All right, everyone. Welcome once again to The Faces of Business. I'm your host, Damon Pastolka, and I am excited for our guest today because we have Heather Johnson here from Ingenium. We're going to be talking about sustainable business waste management. And Heather, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I'm glad to have you today, Heather, because I think we're going to have plenty to talk about when we talk about business waste management. Because, you know, for many years, if we roll the clock back 20 or 30 years, we wouldn't be talking about these kind of things unless there was some, you know, if you dispose of it, it's going to be a huge EPA problem, right? But I really, me, knowing a little bit I do about manufacturing and other industries, it seems like people are really looking at this differently over the last 10 or 15 years.
I would agree that is an absolute true statement.
Yeah, yeah. So Heather, tell us a little bit about yourself, because what your background, how you got into this, because you went to Cal State Business Administration, waste management. It's kind of cool.
Before I do that, you said 20, 30 years ago, waste was not the same thing. And it's interesting because I'm dating myself now, but I've been doing this for 28 years. And I think, you know, it was a newer consideration, but it wasn't brand new when I started in the industry. And to your point, in the last 10 to 15 years, it has really evolved in terms of the environmental impacts of hazardous waste and how can we manage waste, look at it differently, and ultimately reduce it, recycle it, and dumb it down to nothing. And maybe one day we can't get to that. But to answer your question, yes, I was going to college. I was pursuing a degree in accounting, business administration, concentration in accounting. And I had to get a job to support myself while I was going to school. So in the beginning, I started with a company in waste management answering phones. It was a really simple job. I didn't have to work real hard. And along the way, I just kind of pursued opportunities within the organization that led me to where I am today. Not anything specific, but just taking initiative. And ultimately, I finished my degree, but never chose to be an accountant. And I can tell you this much. I don't know what I would do if I was an accountant. It would be quite different from the path that I've otherwise taken to get here today.
No doubt. No doubt. So if people are wondering now, maybe what are the typical situations where you're going in and helping a company or somebody? What are the kind of things that you're working on day in, day out, or your company is?
Okay. Yeah. So specifically, many businesses in their processes generate chemical waste, hazardous, toxic materials that cannot go into their solid waste trash bins. And so they'll contact a company like Ingenium to come in and help them understand the regulatory aspects of what they're working with. So most of our customers are regularly generating materials that they have to manage specially as hazardous waste. And that's our typical customer.
Okay. So when they're doing this, what kind of situations do you run into in this? So do they usually even know they've got a problem, or they've gotten in trouble for something and then they call you? How does this usually work?
That's a good question. I haven't considered it from that perspective, but the answer is both, because there are companies still to this day, believe it or not, that don't understand what they're supposed to be doing to be in compliance with regulation. And when they get inspected and popped, they will call a company like us. Then there's, I think, more the majority of businesses that this has been around long enough that people within the organization are aware of, you know, the regulatory compliance aspects. And so they'll call a company like Ingenium. And there are companies that have full-time employees who understand hazardous waste, or that they need to be managing it compliantly. And then there are other companies that they're small, like startups, and they don't necessarily have a single person dedicated to waste, not even just waste, but their environmental compliance as an organization. And they're wearing multiple hats as a startup, and this is one piece of it, which is actually those companies have more challenges because they don't understand it to the same extent somebody who's in the field and does it on a full-time basis.
Yeah, no doubt. Because I'm sure there's a lot of times that people are not doing it to the letter of the law or however they should be, and they don't even realize it.
Yeah, and you know, to tell you the truth, it's interesting because a lot of businesses do try to do it properly, and they still don't do everything right and receive violations. And we also can help with that kind of stuff too. And I'm sure it's frustrating for them when they're thinking, well, even like you and I in our general lives, right? If we don't know there's a regulation for something and we're not doing it, it's not deliberate, yet we're getting in trouble.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, you know, I've had the pleasure of being able to, as we talked about before, I'm in the Northwest, the aerospace industry, I've been in a lot of finishing places, CNC machining, assembly places, and using all different kinds of things. And I am constantly amazed at the vast amount of materials that are used, that are generated, and then that you have to worry about disposing of. Mm-hmm. And, you know, literally you will come into places that have, you know, the systems just to keep track of things. And I mean, online monitoring. I was in a paint production facility in Seattle a few years ago. And I was like, oh my goodness, the high-tech things they've got to make sure that nothing's going out, to make sure that everything's getting collected. And it's just amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So as you're going out and doing this stuff, what are some of the common things that you see that people may be overlooking or that they might want to consider, but they're not considering?
I think what's most current and not as current as it once was is the opportunity to recycle hazardous waste. So a lot of businesses have these waste reduction initiatives or zero waste initiatives. And they're looking at, you know, their office space, what's going into their general trash. They're looking at their food waste and what might be composted, you know, to help meet their numbers. And hazardous waste also has a lot of opportunity, more now than it ever did, for better technologies to treat material, or in some instances, more now than ever, reusing a chemical before it becomes a waste. So from a compliance standpoint, once you call something waste, you have to manage it as waste. But if you wait to call it a waste and make sure there's no better use for it or continued use of it, then you're not bound by the regulatory management of a material. So I think a lot of people don't necessarily know that, and helping them understand and ask the questions, can anyone else use this? It may no longer be needed in my processes. So what is it? One man's junk is another man's treasure. There is that possibility with hazardous materials that a company may no longer have a need for.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. And Yvonne brings up a good thing. Thanks for the question, Yvonne. How about inhaling the chemicals too? Yeah, that is a common thing in a lot of places, and something you run into a lot. You have to worry about the vapors, that's for sure.
And there's a bunch of compliance surrounding that to protect employees more now than ever. And that shocks me when businesses still expect their employees to operate in a less than safe environment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, they should not be. That's for sure. So
as you've been in this a little while and you're going out now, what are some of the things that you see that's happening now that didn't happen 10 years ago that really is encouraging about improving the way that we either reduce, reuse, recycle, whatever?
It's becoming more of a corporate initiative than it ever was. When we first started pushing sustainability, this was back in maybe 08, the thought of recycling, maybe not recycling, because that's been a buzzword for a while, but sustainability itself, that's now a buzzword, was not even a consideration mm-hmm. when it came to waste. And it's costly. In many instances, it will cost a business more money to be greener than it would to just traditionally waste things to the landfill or incineration. Mm-hmm. And now you've got more initiatives in the last probably 5 to 10 years that are ESG. I don't know if you've heard that mm-hmm. acronym, but that's got a lot of buzz around it. That's forcing corporations on behalf of their shareholders to ensure that they're doing everything they can for the environment, really. And so sustainability, they're willing to pay a little bit more today than they were in the past. And more I see that becoming the norm.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. So do you also think that the waste disposal costs are helping to drive more sustainable efforts because it's just getting more and more expensive to dispose of this waste?
It is more and more expensive to dispose of the waste. And so, yes, I guess from the standpoint of motivation to find better ways to manage material longer before it becomes a waste. Yes, absolutely. Once it's a waste, then doing something more sustainable might be more costly than traditional disposal. So you've got a myriad of some customers are like, absolutely, I can't pay a dime more, put it in the landfill. And then you have other customers that are like, I don't care how much it costs. I've got these metrics that I'm bound to. And if I don't meet them, I have other problems. So a spectrum like that.
Yeah. So what are some of the cool things you see happening now? You talked a little bit about recycling, but is there an example of, holy heck, I never thought we would see a day when this doesn't go to the landfill anymore?
I don't have a specific chemical to speak of, but more and more things are finding homes outside of the landfill. And I'll tell you this, maybe even incineration. So, historically, waste has gone for landfill or incineration. And in recent years, there's been capacity challenges with the incinerators that have forced us to think differently, more different than we ever have in the history. Like I told you earlier, I'm 28 years into this. And historically, businesses have even overclassed waste and bound themselves to more regulatory oversight than might have been necessary. And now we're having to become more creative and saying, okay, is this constituent truly part of your waste stream? Because if not, let's not state that it is, because everything that you declare to be part of your waste is relevant to how you can treat it. And mm-hmm. so based on that, you may limit yourself to your treatment options, whereby if you're like, well, we used that chemical 30 years ago, it's no longer in our processes, let's not talk about it as if it's relevant today, and it opens up more opportunities. So that's trending in real time for us because we're forced to present options to our customers.
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned incineration. So is that a popular way to get rid of a lot of these chemicals?
Yes. It in the past, it was one of two ways only to get rid of chemicals. You either buried it or you burned it. And then there's regulation around what you can bury. And if you can't bury it, you're forced to burn it. Even to the extent where you have inorganic materials that don't have any burn value that you're burning because the regulation requires it.
Okay. Okay. Because I would think I don't know enough about burning things, but I would almost think that burning things add some inherent other problems.
100%. It does. Yeah.
Wow, I have to think. I'm just going to have to quit going down that path, I think, because, the mix of chemicals, right? You're right. So I'm in an incineration place and I'm running the incineration place. Well, I have this chemical today, that chemical tomorrow, that chemical after that. How do I make sure that what's going out the stack, because it's heat's got to go somewhere, is not the wrong thing because of the differences in the things that are going through? It's got to be a challenge.
I imagine. I've never worked at an incinerator. I do know that they have waste acceptance protocol and, they have to be to the book too on what they do to ensure the best outcome for the people and the environment. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm sure. So what are the industries where you go, okay, this is typically where we would get called into? I know we talked about manufacturing or something like that, but what are they typically doing where you're going to need to be, or you're most beneficial?
So we do a lot of work in the pharmaceutical research and development space, biotech. They're using lots of different chemicals in their science, and we come in on the back end and take that material out when they no longer have a use for it or it expires. In a lot of instances, chemicals have expiration dates that bigger companies, their quality control prevent them from continuing to use them. One good thing that Ingenium has done is we've found a way to repurpose some of those chemicals, meaning continuing the life of them before making them waste, for the pharmaceutical and biotech space, because they may find that, something that they're using in their research doesn't work for them, but it's really good chemical that we can otherwise rehome and someone else can take advantage of the use of it. That's beneficial to both parties because to buy new chemicals is also costly. And then to waste them is also costly. So it helps out there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So you talked about companies are, they have the metrics now, they need to be more sustainable. They're trying to go to zero waste. What are some of the innovative things that you see these companies doing to go, okay, we're going to take this two steps farther to really make sure we're not just getting close, we're really going all the way?
There's a couple things that businesses are doing today. One of them is they're pushing back on their suppliers upstream on things, even like packaging. So if they're buying things that are coming in a bunch of packaging, okay, what kind of materials are we receiving in terms of packaging that can be changed so that it's not wasted? Making sure that their suppliers are using materials that can be recycled or even returned and reused. That one's a little bit more challenging, but pushing back upstream to receive less potential waste that they become responsible for. And another thing I'm seeing is process re-engineering. So finding ways to implement processes that change how the waste is generated, meaning if there's a chemical that is problematic downstream, maybe they can change their engineering to not have that end up in that waste stream. It can go into its own vessel, or also using different chemicals that may be less toxic and still work within their processes. So a variety of things that they can do to affect change internally and reduce the amount of waste that comes out the back end. And that would be both hazardous and solid trash.
Very cool. Very cool. It is the first thing you said, I think, is something that's so common sense and practical, but has been overlooked for many, many years. It's just making sure that I'm not, don't overpackage your stuff coming to me. Let's make sure it's packaged appropriately, or even look at a bulk packaging option or something else to minimize or reduce that what's coming to us. Yeah.
I remember one Christmas, sorry to interrupt you, but
no, go.
I never paid attention probably, but I'm driving down the street from my house and there's, I don't know how many houses on the block, let's call it 50. And their trash cans are overflowing with packaging that all their kids' toys were, besides the wrapping for Christmas, but the actual plastic. And I mean, it's just an abundant amount of waste. And it dawned on me at that moment in time, man, we are so wasteful as a society. And do we really need pretty packaging to hold our Barbie doll upright on the store shelf? I don't know. But it'll be interesting to see if anything like that changes over time, because
yeah,
it's just so much.
It really is. And you make a great point. And that's that. I thought that to myself many times, especially when you look at even inside the packaging, things are double and triple and quadruple tied into the packaging, inside the other packaging, right, inside of that packaging. And then, you know, it really is. So that kind of gets me into a little different thing. You know, one of the things that I've thought about when we think about sustainability is how last mile delivery has changed the waste streams in at least the U.S. What are your comments on that? I mean, because we're delivering products to people a lot differently than we were 5 or 10 years ago.
What are you referring to specifically? I'm not
like the fact that, okay, say 10 years ago, I would go buy a pair of shoes at a store. And now I haven't been in a store in 5 years to buy a pair of shoes because it comes to me. But when it comes to me, that single package comes to my house, and it's not just the shoe box, it's inside of another box with packaging around it. Mm-hmm. And you know, when we look at sustainability, that to me seems like we took a couple steps backwards instead of going forward.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think we have more waste than ever as a result. Not only that, when you get your Amazon package, it's a box that'll fit 10 kids in it, as opposed to, you know, the small little USB device that you ordered for delivery. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I think I heard, don't quote me on this, but I thought Amazon was taking some of those boxes back for reuse. Oh. I feel like I heard that, but maybe I just dreamt that would be a good idea.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I know, because, you know, the one thing is good about corrugated, does get recycled at a reasonable rate. And and it is one of the easier things to recycle. But it always is interesting to see how our changing consumer habits really affect the environment in ways that I think a lot of people that think consider themselves environmentally friendly, but order from Amazon every day, may not consider that as much as they should.
Mm-hmm.
I love Amazon. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I'm not. Yeah. And water bottles too. That's another one.
Yeah.
I do have this. So that saves me a lot of water. I have one of those too,
but I know a lot of people that refuse to do that and buy, you know, the bottles of water.
Yeah. 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 That's another great thing. And so the different chemicals, we saw some of this, and like I said, it's been a number of years since I've actually been running a manufacturing company. Are you seeing that there's a lot more environmentally friendly materials that are being developed, or is it still limited?
I think there's more than there used to be, but they're still limited. And my experience is some of the more environmentally friendly chemicals don't perform the same for these businesses, and stuff. When it's outlawed, they have no choice. They can't use it anymore. But otherwise, just to try, I remember years ago in the laboratory, they use a lot of mercury thermometers, and mercury is toxic, obviously. And anytime a thermometer would break, they would do what's called a spill cleanup, which is contain the mercury. And then they would have a mercury contaminated debris that had to go out as hazardous waste. And so different products came on the market that were more environmentally friendly, because mercury is not. Mm-hmm. But I remember hearing, but they don't work the same, you know? So it's like you have to make a choice. Do you want the more environmentally friendly product that doesn't work as well? And I don't know what that means to their respective businesses, or the one that's highly toxic that costs you a lot for disposal when it breaks. And maybe forget the disposal cost if you care about the environment. Perhaps you should be working more to not use that mercury. So it's a conundrum, I think, with a lot of products.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So in your years of doing this, and if you can't say dope, but what's the wildest situation you've come into? Because I envision some pretty good doozies.
I actually have a pretty good doozy that, let me see if I can sum it up easily. So because we work with a lot of laboratories, imagine just tons of, think of a chemistry lab when you were in high school or college, just all the little different chemicals. So these labs are stock full of every type of chemical you can imagine for research. And there was the crazy mad scientist guy that worked for one of these labs for over 50 years. He died. And unbeknownst to the company he worked for, he had been slowly taking chemicals home from the lab over many, many, many years. So when he passed away and he was discovered in his home a week later or something, this is a gnarly story.
Oh, wow.
There was nowhere for this gentleman to sit in his house except one lazy boy chair. He had chemicals stacked floor to ceiling in his shower, in his kitchen sink. Like, it was just the crazy. And then he had radioactive materials. He had a
radioactive,
it's called a scintillation counter. So he had not just the chemicals, but equipment. And we got the cleanup job. He had so much explosive material that we had to work with the local fire department to detonate this stuff out in the desert where it could be safely managed. He had chemicals under his house. He had one of those mobile home, I guess you call it.
Yeah.
So under his house. And every time we thought we had gotten everything, they found more in the nooks and crannies. There was some little outdoor storage thing. It was a crazy, his car was full everywhere, but the driver's seat. Yeah.
Well, that's hoarding at another level and another, wow.
I said, where does this guy shower? And they said, he must have gone to his work to shower. But
yeah.
That was a crazy job.
Well, and the things you're talking about too, they weren't just easy peasy get rid of it. And I have to assume identification was a challenge as well.
Yeah, and a lot of the chemicals were the ones that aren't even legal anymore, like stuff peroxide forming things, and which is, they present their own hazards and dangers just from a stability standpoint. Yeah. So it was quite the job.
Yeah. So what's the wildest chemicals you guys have had to handle?
There are some chemicals that we can't even handle because they have crystallization around the lids that make them explosive. So you have to have specialty equipment to help stabilize it before it gets transported for disposal. Picric acid. Have you heard of that? Different things in the chemistry labs that are old. So if they don't clear things out timely and they age, they start to present other hazards associated with them.
Wow. Wow. It makes me think of the place that I think in Washington State where I live is the most interesting and terrifying. Is I had a pretty personal tour of the Hanford nuclear facility in Central Washington. And when you go by those tanks, or as close as you want to be, it is very, very surreal to understand what they were doing there and the chemicals that are out there yet.
Mm-hmm. Scary, right?
Oh my. Oh my. Yeah. It's, well, and to think what they were trying to do, when you understand that, even I grew up in the Dakotas and they had the arsenic mining of gold. Mm. Well, when you understand how they do that by just basically running the liquid over the gold and it liquefies the gold and they somehow get it out at the end. That's what they were trying to do with uranium and making plutonium and some of that to get it to refine it. And then the things that have happened over the years and the fact that they're doing that now and then building the glass vitrification thing that they're doing out there now, that's, $10 billion over budget, and the things are so, it just really is some of the things we've done and they seem necessary at the time, and maybe they were, are really causing us some long-term headaches. That's for sure.
That is true.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are you excited about? What are you excited about in what you do today?
I'm excited to see where the industry goes. I think I talked to a lot of people about this. we're seeing a trend in the younger generations coming into the workforce who have an expectation of their employer to do things better than historically they've been done. And what you're talking about, even in the radiation plants, is, you know, hopefully we're learning, and through education, we're making change in how we operate to ultimately preserve our environment and the safety of people, right? Because yeah. a lot of the things that we work with, we're learning are posing not just environmental hazards, but health hazards to yeah. people, you know, yeah. And these cancers and these health issues that result. So everybody being on board with the environment and the sustainability, continuing to educate people and seeing the results of that effort. I mentioned earlier, we're seeing it more today than we were, but I think we still have a long way to go because of the cost of this stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a movement, I guess.
Yeah. And that is good. I think that's one of the great things as generations come along, trying to do things better, and it'll only help us in those regards. That's for sure. And we learn more too, honestly, because mm-hmm. a lot of things happened that we didn't even know. I mean, I go back to the Hanford thing, that they were doing things with the best of their ability at that time. They didn't have an idea what they were doing or the long-term effects of it, but that's cool. That's cool. So what's new for Ingenium this year?
This year, actually, I am excited to say not a lot.
There you go.
Yeah, the last few years we've taken on a lot of change and it's been challenging. And so this is kind of the year of recalibration and, you know, make sure our processes are adequately dialed in so that we can continue to grow. And that sounds simple, but it's a big deal for us because we've been on this path of growth that's needs to slow down a little bit and make sure that we're all moving in the right direction.
Yes. And you're in an industry where, you know, you can't make mistakes. That's the right. That's the other thing. The process is very critical.
The training is critical, making sure people know the hazards they're working with. Mm-hmm. And then the regulatory compliance side, making sure that we don't put our customers in a position where when they're inspected, they're receiving violations because
yes.
they're relying on us to be the experts in a large way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. And just to keep up with the regulations and the training that you have to do on the new regulations has to be pretty daunting.
We have a pretty good team that does that for us and keeps us compliant because we have our own compliance as well internally mm-hmm. That we're bound by for ensuring that we're doing things right.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have to have special certifications?
We have to have a lot of permits.
Okay.
All the different regulatory agencies that have their hand in the situation, it's really challenging to keep up with all the changing regulations. And then the states, it doesn't even stop and start from the federal level. It's the states and the counties and mm-hmm. the respective local authorities all have an idea of what they want you to be doing. And it's different. I wish they would standardize more. It would be easier as a business, depending on where we operate, to do things right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. I can certainly imagine that where you're at makes a huge difference in how you have to do the things you do. All right. Well, it's been awesome talking to you, Heather, today. And we were talking about sustainable business waste management. What is new in the industry that you go, I really think, and we talked about the people coming in and doing it, but what are some things that you see that really could change the way that it's being done?
I can tell you what we're doing to help force change more and bring visibility to people for what they're currently generating and get them going in the right direction for reduction is zero waste certification. So we're helping by going into these businesses. When you ask a business, a smaller or mid-sized business, the larger ones might be a little bit further along with this effort. But, you know, what are you guys throwing in your trash here? They don't have a clue. What, you know, your staff that sits in a cubicle, their local trash to all the way up to the manufacturing debris that's not hazardous, right? So just the mm-hmm. regular trash bins that, you know, waste management picks up. And they don't know. And so how do you start reduction when you don't even know what you're working with? How do you determine where you have opportunity to do something different when you don't know where you're at? So we have a process that we've developed where we start with it's a dumpster dive for all intents and purposes. We send our crew out and we get in the trash and we say, here's your data. This is a report that demonstrates for you what's happening today. And then we work with them over time to reduce what goes into that trash, either by redirecting it to a recycling situation. Like you mentioned, the corrugated boxes, they're one of the easiest. Most businesses, although not all, have recycling for the cardboard boxes. But then what else is in there? And can it be used somewhere else, or can it be recycled? And really helping them get on this path to reduce the amount of waste that goes into the landfill ultimately. And so it's been pretty cool to watch that unfold. It's starting to get a lot of traction. And I think that's going to be a game changer for Ingenium, because we're on the front lines promoting this opportunity to businesses, and it's being embraced really well right now.
Nice. So the zero waste certification, that is super cool, because there are a lot of opportunities, I'm sure, just by taking a look at what you're throwing out, and like you said, recycling or reusing somehow someplace else with almost any business.
You know, it's funny, if you take a trash can out of somebody's office, the trash goes down. I don't know why. They have to walk further to throw something.
I love that. Take the trash can out, they make less trash. That's great. Well, I still, like I said, it's been a while since I've been in a manufacturing facility running them. But I was running a wood retail fixture manufacturer. We had a couple of facilities on either side of the U.S. And when we started recycling the wood waste in different things, it was I don't know how many, you know, whatever the big containers on a truck were going to the landfill every week. Mm-hmm. It was nuts how much that was when we found people that would take it and recycle it and use it.
Yeah.
And for us at that time, it was just, you can have it, just because we didn't want to pay to dispose of it. And this is, and you know, you think about office buildings, you think about other things like a downtown office building. There are a lot of trash coming out of one of those on a daily basis. So,
yeah. And they all add up in aggregate. It's a lot of waste.
Good stuff. Well, I just want to thank you for being here today, Heather. And again, we had Heather Johnson here from Ingenium. They're out there helping people, you know, talk about sustainability, reduce their business waste streams, help these companies that are producing waste in manufacturing and pharmaceutical and other places really understand how they can maybe use their chemicals and other things a little bit better, recycle things a lot better to ultimately create a more sustainable business. Thanks for being here today, Heather.
Thank you, Damon.
All right. Well, everyone else, Yvonne, thanks for the questions today. Great. I love it. Everyone else that was listening, thanks for listening. And if you want to go back to the beginning of this, you can do that right there on the places where it's live, or go on to YouTube. It'll be there as well. We'll be back again next week. Heather, hang out just for a moment and we'll finish up.